Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, December 7, 2017. A lawmaker in Yei River State is gunned down.
The late was shot by anti-peace elements loyal to Riek Machar in Mijali sub-county. The government of Yei River State strongly condemned this criminal and terrorism act carried out by the anti-peace elements.
And a local NGO worker is killed in Juba.
I think that guy who is suspected to have hired these people is under arrest at Muniki police station. So we'll find out tomorrow whether he has made some confession, which will help us to lead to the arrest of the perpetrators.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The Yei River State government is accusing SPLA-IO rebels loyal to former first vice president Riek Machar of killing a lawmaker representing the Lowolo County in the state's Transitional Legislative Assembly. Jacob Kwensuk was shot dead by unknown armed men in Mijali village on the Ugandan side of the border with South Sudan. Daniel Friday Martin has the story for VOA from Yei.
State lawmaker Jacob Kwensuk was killed yesterday while he was meeting with South Sudanese refugees who fled their homes when fighting spread to the Greater Kajokeji area in July of last year. Last month, members of parliament representing the four counties of Liwolo, Ngepo, Kajokeji and Kangapo of Kajokeji went to northern Uganda to consult the refugees about establishing a grassroots-led peace initiative. Alfred Kennedy Doko, the Yei River State Information Minister, accused armed opposition forces loyal to former first vice president Riek Machar of killing Kwensuk.
The late was shot by anti-peace elements loyal to Riek Machar in Mijali sub-county. The government of Yei River State strongly condemned this criminal and terrorism act carried out by the anti-peace elements.
Why Godwill, a rebel spokesman in Yei River State, says his group had nothing to do with Kwensuk's death.
We are not aware of any member of parliament who was killed in any of the SPLA-IO-controlled areas in Yei River State. If they say deceased was shot at Mijale, then the other government of David Lokonga should have known that area is in the Yumbe district of Uganda. All our forces are inside South Sudan and they have nothing to do in the Ugandan soil. Let them ask the authorities in the area where Jacob was killed about the circumstances that took him to meet with his death there.
Noel Malis-Scopers, a member of parliament representing Mugo County in the State Legislative Assembly, condemned the killing.
The lives of the honorable members is at a target because our constituencies are being contested by the opposition and also the government. I condemned it in the strongest terms possible that this act should not repeat itself, and we are asking the authorities in Uganda, particularly at the Mijale Center, to launch an investigation into this issue.
MP Awata Esther, who represents Lanya County, is calling on warring parties to end the conflict peacefully.
Up to now, we have not got any information about who killed him, but we heard that he was shot. Our problem, we cannot wait someone from outside to come and talk to us, but we ourselves in Yei River State should talk to ourselves and get a solution. We have seen how this war has really let us down. No development.
MP Selina Peter from the Greater Kajokeji area also condemned the killing and urged both sides to end human rights violations.
We need to seek for ways of how to address issues of national concern, not by killing ourselves. We are very sad. We've lost Jacob. We want to urge the warring parties to ensure that this war stops, so that peace returns, so that we don't continue losing lives just in this way.
Last week, Yei River State officials also accused SPLA-IO rebels loyal to Machar of beheading two civilians in Jale village near the South Sudan-Uganda border, an accusation the rebels have also denied. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin in Yei.
A South Sudanese national working for a local non-governmental organization was killed last night by an unidentified gunman in Juba's Muniki neighborhood. Tedros Tombe had been working as a finance administrator for the Community Media Network when he was gunned down last night. A police spokesman says they have arrested a suspect in connection with the case. Nabil Biagio has more for VOA from Juba.
Josephine Achiro, executive director at the Juba-based Community Media Network, says she was with Tedros Tombe a few hours before he was shot.
I last talked to him yesterday at around 4:30. I left him in the office because I was going to buy a battery for my car. And I went home, and that was my last talk with him. And so when he came to me in the office, he was giving me an update because he went to the commission to renew our certificate, to visit RRC, to renew our certificate for free trade.
Achiro says she received a phone call about 9 p.m. explaining that Tombe was shot. An hour or two later, she says, she learned her friend passed away at Freedom Hospital in Haimayo. Achiro believes Tombe was targeted.
He's not a troublemaker. He's really not. I have worked with him for more than 8 years now. He has never caused any problems, not even with his colleague in the office. But I'm suspecting that someone must be targeting him because these guys came and called him, asked him whether this is your car. He said yes. And they also asked him whether you are Zidu. His family name is Zidu. He said, yes, it's me. Then they called him.
Acting police spokesman Colonel James Dack says Tombe was murdered. He says a preliminary investigation indicates that the suspect in custody, who remains unidentified, owed more than $4,000 to Tombe for a car purchase he made.
That guy whom he arrested because he needs money from him is the one suspected who have hired the people to come and kill Jito. So these two guys, they came, they found that they were playing dominoes, those of Jito. Then he was called out from the group. So he went and greeted them, faithfully and good faith. Then they took him at the corner and they shot him and they disappeared.
Dak says he is optimistic that the police will track down the gunman by Friday.
The investigation is still going on, but I think that guy who is suspected to have hired these people is under arrest at Munike police station. So we'll find out tomorrow whether he has made some confession, which will help us to lead to the arrest of the perpetrator.
Some news websites reported that Tombe was a former journalist. The deceased was working in finance at the Catholic Radio Network and later at the Community Media Network, but was not ever employed as a journalist. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
South Sudanese refugees in Uganda's Adjumani district say violence against women and girls is widespread in the settlements. The refugees say forced marriages is to blame for some of the gender-based violence. Simon Peter Apiku has more for VOA from Adjumani in northern Uganda.
Some 70 young refugees, including about two dozen women and girls from seven settlements in Adjumani, took part in a two-day training workshop organized by the I Am Peace Project. It is being carried out in tandem with the 16 Days of Activism campaign against gender-based violence. Organizers with Lutheran World Federation, which funded the training, say the objective is to raise awareness about sexual violence and to mobilize change in refugee settlements. Workshop participant Lueth Maluk from the Baratuku settlement says the fairly common practice of forced marriages is largely to blame for creating unstable families under which women often endure much violence at the hands of their spouses.
The gender-based violence is common in the settlement, especially the post-marriage, because if you go to the settlement, people are poor. So that makes them to decide to give the young girl to get married to any who will pay the dowries.
South Sudanese refugee Amer Deng agrees forced marriages are rife in the camps. She says it is common for parents to offer their daughters for marriage to older men in South Sudan who end up abusing the young girls.
The most problem that in our country is post-marriage. They can force girls and some parents can go to school and feed girls away from there and take them to South Sudan for forced marriage. That is the most one which is affecting youth in Baratoko.
One of the driving factors of forced marriages, says Mabiora Kwei, a refugee from the Nyumadzi camp, is poverty. He argues parents seem to be all too eager to sacrifice the happiness of their daughters for short-term material gains.
In Idinka, a young girl of below 18 would be forced to get married to a rich person so that the family will benefit from the girl.
Harriet Akongo, a participant in the training from the Elema settlement, says such men, who many times are already married to two or three women, turn out to be abusive.
They're beating their wives, fighting with their wives. Moreover, they're youths.
Bayo Okuda Esther, the local government official in charge of gender issues in Adjumani district and a facilitator at the workshop, says due to the ongoing conflict in South Sudan, many men have lost everything, including their sense of pride and responsibility, which fuels domestic violence.
You have been someone who is able providing for your family. You have certain things that are keeping your family. But in the course of the war, this thing is lost. When you come, you are stressed, life is hard, you are no longer respected, your social respect has faded.
Esther says despite rampant incidents of gender-based violence in the settlements, most refugees rarely report cases to the authorities.
Most of them suffer silently. And today we are coming up loud to make sure that everybody is informed and aware, so that we together join hands to see that this is no more in these settlements.
The sessions focused on what youth can do to prevent gender-based violence in their communities. Malouk says he learned a great deal during the sessions and wants to share that knowledge with other youth in his settlement.
We have learned a lot, and I feel like if we go back, we shall make more sensitization to our youth or awareness. We talk about the disadvantages of bad part of this LGBT, especially the earlier marriage.
Ijo Didimas, public relations officer for the I Am Peace project, says the refugees are going back to their settlements with a clear plan to fight violence against women and girls.
The youth have given us some ideas on how they are going to effect this this program in their respective settlements.
The global theme of the campaign for 2017, which ends this Sunday, is Leave No One Behind and Violence Against Women and Girls. The UN says the theme reinforces the world's commitment to a world free from violence for all women and girls, including refugees, migrants, and minorities. For VOA News, I am Simon Peter Piku in Adjumani.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, police in Yei say errant soldiers must be taken to court. Find out why when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what quality do you like the most about your best friend?
First of all, she's an honest person. She's so social, and she's the type of person that would always be there to listen, would always be there to want to help people.
Being free around her, being myself around her, that's the best quality that I like.
I learn from him every day because he's actually an hardworking person, so I get to learn a lot of things. There's one thing that keeps us going, because most times, if I don't gain from you as a friend, I feel you don't have to be around me.
He always encourages me in every situation in my life, mostly when I am down.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The commissioner of police in Yei River State says the army should set up a military court to try errant soldiers who raped women in Yei. A local rights group says all the warring parties, including the government and rebels, must be held accountable for right abuses. Daniel Friday Martin has this story for VOA from Ye.
A Ye resident whom we are identifying by only her first name, Vicky, for safety reasons, tells South Sudan in Focus her sister was raped by soldiers in October. Speaking in Arabic, Vicky blames the police for releasing rapists without trial or punishment.
There are a lot of things happening to us in Ye as women, and nobody cares to see that there is justice. Young girls and women in the rural areas are being raped, but even when a case is presented or reported, nobody takes a responsibility to follow it up. Another thing is that once a perpetrator kills or rapes somebody in Ye, the suspects are allowed to move freely. They never face justice in court. We need the law to take its course so that nobody plays with the law.
A resident we will only identify as David for fear of reprisal says his daughter was raped by armed men in Ye town earlier this year. He says he immediately reported the case to the police, but his daughter has yet to see justice. Speaking in Arabic, David says the army should set up a military court in Ye and try soldiers accused of human rights violations.
There was an armed man who raped my daughter, and I am not happy because I don't expect such things to happen in our country. I followed court procedures, but I couldn't succeed. If this court martial was brought to Ye, it will help a lot. I am calling on the government to keep on watch so that these things will not happen in our community.
Ye River State Police Commissioner Yorosalo Jankamba says most human rights abusers, including murderers and rapists, are men in uniform. He says at least five soldiers accused of raping women after violence broke out in Ye in July last year are being detained at military barracks without trial. Kamba says if soldiers accused of rights violations are tried in a court martial, it will help reduce what he calls rampant human rights violations in the state.
These are military cases like rape, sexual violence, and rape, murder, and so forth. These cases are actually recurring here. People are using gunpoint. That is the reason why I'm saying a competent court, which you can even see on these cases, are military court martial, because the nature of the case are military nature, and people murdered by a gunpoint. Military court martial is constituted especially for HS cases. That court, if it has reached here in Ye, it will rescue lives of the people, or it will track down the mass killing of the people. Because when one person was tried and parents caught it before the public, some people will refrain of doing HS things.
SPLA spokesman Brigadier General Lul Roy Kong says the establishment of a court martial will depend on what the SPLA commander in Ye deems is appropriate moving forward.
Since the culprit has been arrested, the right military procedures are going to be used. And if there is need for a general court martial to be set up in Ye, and then the SPLA commander in the area is going to communicate using a relevant chain of command to recommend the setting up. So there was no official communication from our command.
Local human rights activists Benson Soro says a court martial must be held to try armed men, whether they are with the government or opposition groups in the area.
We really need an active court martial, that the perpetrators of all these inhuman activities are brought to book and they are charged according to their actions. Some of these killings were intentional. You know, someone goes like into the field and collects things, and then this person is killed. Like there's one of the pastors who was killed and just kidnapped from a market when he was selling his produce. It is not one-sided. We have the opposition. We also have the government. And these people are all being involved in committing such atrocities. They must account for it.
Widespread human rights abuses have been reported in Ye since a fresh wave of violence broke out in Juba in July 2016 and rapidly spread to other states of the country. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin.
A top UN official visiting South Sudan says any UN official accused of sexual exploitation must be investigated and punished for their actions. The UN Assistant Secretary General for Victims' Rights says that kind of behavior undermines the UN's integrity. Dimo Silva Aurelio has this report for VOA from Juba.
One South Sudanese woman says when she applied for a job in one of the UN agencies operating in the country, her would-be boss demanded sex in exchange for the job. The woman, whom we will call Hadia to protect her privacy, says when she applied with one of the UN agencies, her employer demanded for a relationship in return for a job, an offer she declined. Hadia's voice has been purposely distorted to protect her identity.
This guy told me completely I have to be his girlfriend. So, well, I can never be somebody's. You know, I want to stand outside there at all and have to tell stories to my kids or to my future friends and any other person, because at the end of the day, I am going to do this for an exchange. And what's going to happen? For instance, there's a scenario of maybe I'm going to meet this person in future and I still have a flashback. Oh, so I'm having this job and this guy used me.
Hadia is calling on women everywhere in South Sudan to speak up against sexual abuse. She says apart from sexual exploitation, at times some UN employees in higher positions demand cash bribes in exchange for a job. She says because of the economic crisis, some women may just give into sexual exploitation because they are desperate.
This is happening, and especially now that we have the economic crisis issue, you know, I'm worried of, oh my gosh, okay, why don't I just do this? It's just a done for once. I've not been having a job for the last 2 years, 3 years, or maybe I'm keeping on applying and I'm not even being shortlisted. But here, I have a window to get through, so why don't I do it?
Jane Connors, the UN Assistant Secretary General Victims' Rights Advocate, told reporters in Juba today there are no statistics available on the number of cases of sexual exploitation linked to UN officials and employees in South Sudan. But Connors says she believes hundreds of women and men suffer in silence because they do not want to lose their jobs or because of the stigma attached to reporting sexual exploitation.
I also had an opportunity to speak to a young woman who did experience this very disturbing conduct at the hands of those who were affiliated in some way to the United Nations system, and spoke of her needs and what she wished for, her aspirations for the future. My view is this conduct is not inevitable. It is something that emerges out of imbalance in power relations. Those who engage in the conduct are in a position of power, and those who are subject to it are in a position of vulnerability.
Connors says although thousands of men and women who work with the United Nations uphold the values of the UN Charter and frequently work in situations of great personal risk, the acts of some individuals constitute a crime.
Some, especially in the field, have engaged in sexual exploitation and abuse. This exploitation and abuse is sometimes perpetrated by UN peacekeepers, non-UN troops, UN civilian personnel. And it is a conduct which is absolutely abhorrent and a conduct which is extraordinarily painful to its victims and undermines the United Nations itself.
Connors says the UN must put in place measures to hold the perpetrators accountable.
What we want to do is to have those preventive efforts in place, and they should essentially have two elements, to make sure that those who are in these positions of power know that this conduct is absolutely intolerable, and to change their attitudes with regard to those to whom they owe the highest standard of conduct. The second issue is to make the community aware of what they should expect from those who work with the United Nations, that these people are there to protect them, these people are there to hopefully improve their lives.
Connor says there should also be a reporting standard mechanism in place for engaging the communities. She says disciplinary measures will be carried out at a national level and national officials will decide when and how to dispose perpetrators of sexual exploitation.
It will be up to the national level to release the identity of those who are held accountable. With regard to the troops. The disposition will be in the country of the which has contributed the troop, and that again will be up to the legal system in terms of whether the identity will be released.
Connor says her office puts the interests of the victims and their aspirations as a top priority, which includes seeking their input on how justice should be carried out regarding UN personnel who exploit others. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Syria. A new study by the UN Refugee Agency finds what it calls shocking evidence of widespread sexual violence against Syrian men and boys inside Syria and in neighboring countries where they seek asylum. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva that nearly 200 refugees in Iraq, Lebanon, and Jordan were interviewed for this study late last year.
The study indicates violence against men and boys is far more widespread than previously believed. It finds gay, bisexual, transgender, and intersex individuals are most vulnerable to sexual assault, with the victims ranging in age from 10 to 80. UN Refugee Agency spokesman Andriy Mahecic says sexual violence against men and boys inside Syria is practiced by all the combatant groups who use it as a weapon of war. He tells VOA one of the victims who gave evidence says he and about 80 other people were held in a tiny cell without any light for 30 days.
They were all stripped naked. During the night, they would be hung by their hands, and their captors would basically torture them with electricity that was applied to genitals and other parts of the body.
The study finds refugee boys in countries of asylum are sexually abused by other male refugees and from males in the local community. It says the high rates of child labor among Syrian refugee children puts young boys at particular risk. Mehecic says refugee boys and men working in the black market or informal economy are prone to sexual exploitation and blackmail.
We have heard evidence and interviews of refugee men and boys talking about the fact that they would not be able to receive their wages until they have performed certain sexual favors to their employers.
Mehecic says the incidence of sexual assault, rape, and violence against Syrian men and boys is vastly underreported because of the stigma attached. He says this cultural silence reinforces the myth that this problem is rare. He adds the UNHCR study shows the opposite to be true. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Harami by CJ Oman.
What's up? Oh, oh, yeah, hey.
Wonder House.
Yeah, hey, yeah.
Talented family.
Oh, 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 yeah, hey.
Lamex.
South Sudan. Yeah, hey, yeah, hey.
We have been listening to CJ Oman with the song Harami. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. would like to hear what you think about our show, you can send us an email at southsudan@voanews.com. You can also find us on Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
You say nothing about me. I don't give a damn. It's my right to tell you this, and it's my right to tell you the truth. And if you hate me, kill me. It's my